It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, which is, let's call it pertinent to this segment, Anthony, because I do believe it's about that time, eh? 5:30 on a Thursday? They told us not to, but...
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, so we chopped the show up into digestible pieces for you. If you can't catch the whole thing live, all 3 hours streaming at the Team 980. Or perhaps even you're driving around listening to something on the radio. You want to go find it on YouTube because you couldn't call in at the time and you want to get your comment in. I don't know how everybody gets their comments in, but the point is y'all leave comments on our YouTube page, at Craig Hoffman, at the Team 980, and then we respond to them here on the radio. One of the big, most commented on pieces, segments that we've done of radio of the past week is on Jaden Daniels and whether or not he scrambled too much in his debut against the Bucks. I actually thought this was a good comment from Sean Adams. I would say mad about the right things, not mad about the wrong things, and some perspective. Sean says, short answer, yes. Long answer, he did what needed to be done to keep several drives alive. Number one, if they do not send him to the Nationals to learn how to slide one day each week, what are they doing? We have an MLB team right here. Learn how to slide so we can keep him for a while. Number two, if that equipment manager doesn't super glue that damn helmet on, zero excuse for it popping off like that. Number three, he will get more comfortable when the game slows down for him, especially in the passing game. He had some open receivers and just either didn't see them or missed them. The final thing I will say is that despite the shortcomings, he still performed the best out of the top three rookie QBs in week one. Let's hope he continues his growth and has a great game against the Giants. Anthony, Sean, if I'm out, you get to host the show. We got to keep the helmet on. I'm not as upset about the sliding thing, but it's okay. Perspective on, hey, you know, he did the best he could, but he's got to get better. That's not what most YouTube comments are. That was good. It had perspective. Good job, Sean.
We love those kinds of, thoughtful responses or, you know, just comments in general. Are there any more?
No, not many. I thought it was a good to start the segment that way.
Okay.
As
on a high note.
Reward.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to. You got to have carrots and sticks.
Yes.
Right. We got to reward the good behavior. Hey, Sean was passionate. He had thoughtfulness. He addressed a couple of different things, but like he was generally on topic.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's done. Now let's get to all the people that we're giving attention because they're Looney Tunes.
Uh-oh.
Not all of them are Looney Tunes. We were talking about, obviously, all aspects of the game on the Take Command film review. So we got a bunch of comments on that. Jamel James, 4835, says, my biggest problem is that BSJ is just as bad as Forbes, but Forbes is in his second year. BSJ has looked like... Anthony, this is pretty funny. He used a donkey emoji because he thinks he's looked like booty.
That's actually funny.
That's actually really funny. He's looked bad for years, but all the attention is going to Forbes. One, Jamel, I don't think that's correct. I think plenty of people, including you, are complaining about Benjamin St. Juice. I think the difference is, like, when Forbes was getting beat, he was, like, not in the picture. He was committing penalties because he's not trusting the technique. Like, Benjamin St. Juice has been on the wrong end of a lot of dudes making plays. Where he is, like, he could also be the one to make the play. So I don't want to fully exonerate him and say... Because I feel like sometimes we, and I will fully own we here, as I'm someone who has said this before, will be like, oh, there's nothing else he could have done. Just you got to tip your hat to the other guy. And it's like, no, I mean, he could have made a play. The other guy made a play on him. He was generally in the right position where often that ball falls incomplete because it's too difficult of a play to make for the other guy. But like, if the other guy's Mike Evans, that's going to be really hard because that guy's going to make that play. And so you then have to up his make a play by making a play yourself. So I do think that it's worth saying that. Whereas Forbes, it's like wrong leverage, wrong technique, wasn't in the right spot, didn't give himself a chance to make a play, where BSJ is in the right spot and has to make one. So they're different. And I think the way those guys have, I presume by the way coaches talk about them, like paid attention in meetings or practiced or, you know, been generally as professionals, it seems like there's some sort of chasm there. Maybe it's a small sliver and it's a significant but small, and maybe it's a huge difference, but I do think that's important to point out. With that said, both of them have to play better in the long run, or they're both going to get replaced as soon as this offseason. Obviously, things complicated now by the Forbes injury that came out today, or that he's going to have surgery today. But I do think, you know, they have results-wise been similarly poor, but the reasons why are different, and the reasons why point to how easy or not it will be to ultimately get it corrected in the long term. On our Tell the Truth Monday segment, let's see, who was this that commented? Jack Tupp, 4358. Sup, Jack? Jack says, the truth, and Tell the Truth Monday, is Jonathan Allen and Terry McLaurin are blue chip players. And like so many other blue chip players on this team before them, their talent was wasted by terrible coaches and horrible schemes or meddling by a terrible owner. We've been in a rebuild for over two decades. The majority of that was under the worst owner, certainly in franchise history, but maybe even NFL history. Game one of year one under the completely new owners and coaches just isn't going to tell us much of anything. Anthony, I've made a grave mistake here. I've included two good comments and never read the comments this week.
There it is.
I'm going to start thinking that reading the comments is a good idea.
It might just be.
No, it's not. Do not. What are you trying to do? Destroy me? Oh, yeah, it is, Craig. Just spend all your time in there.
I mean, you were
for your mental health.
You were, you know, praising these guys for, you know, such great comments. Maybe we should spend them.
Maybe I've hit enough hide user on channel for some of the really bad ones that I've just weeded out the bad ones. Maybe I've self-selected.
Yeah.
So if you could still leave a comment, congratulations, you've passed the test. But I think this is what I will say, and why I actually wanted to pick this out is not just I thought it was good perspective on like, hey, yes, it is okay to say this is game one of year one and we don't know anything yet. But Terry and John are not blue chip players, with all due respect to those guys who I think are awesome and I really, really like. To me, blue chip means you're top five at your position. And I don't think John has been top five. Like, I think there was like a year stretch where John might have been top five at his position. I think Deron is closer to top five, frankly, than John at this point. Maybe I would love nothing more than John Allen to be like, I'll show you, and I'll show everybody. But it shouldn't have to come from hearing someone on the radio say it. I still think John's probably like top 10 of the position. It's not like he stinks. He's really good. He's an awesome football player. But are you consistently week in, week out, top five at your position? And, you know, Terry is definitely not that, even if I think he could have a top five type season if you put him with, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, being more scheme proof and things like that are what make you that kind of guy. So both things can be true. I don't think we learn a lot about where this team is in week one. Certainly where they're going to go. We don't learn that a lot because week one is a gigantic crapshoot for everyone. It's more crapshooty if you have not been together as a team. I think they probably enhanced their own or dehanced their own performance, if you will, by not playing a whole lot in the preseason. So there's a lot of different factors, but we also should just be realistic about this roster, that the best players on it are exceptional football players, but there is just a different level that those top five guys are on. And I don't think that we've had a top five player at their position in Washington, not named Trent Williams or Tress Way, who's a punter, in a long time, certainly not multiples at once. I guess you could have argued maybe there was a year of crossover where, you know, Trent and Sheriff together both were top five. Like, was Sheriff a top five guard at the same time Trent was a top five tackle? I don't know that Brandon ever quite got there. He's certainly one of the best, and you know, he and Trent were really, really good and part of some good O-lines. But outside of those two, like, even Ryan Kerrigan. Like, Ryan Kerrigan was awesome. Now Ryan Kerrigan's catching strays. Sorry, Ryan. Like, Ryan Kerrigan was awesome. Double-digit sack guy, super consistent, professional as all hell. He wasn't one of the best five pass rushers in the NFL, one of the best five edges in the NFL. Like, he wasn't Von Miller in the time that Von was that guy. You know, he's not what Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons are now. 11-sack guy is very different than 14-sack guy. So I just think that we have to be realistic about the difference in greatness from a truly great red chip, if you will, let's say somewhere between 6 and 20, depending on the position. Obviously, like tackles, there's two on every team that start. Wide receivers, you're going to have a little bit more depth, etc. And a true blue chip like Justin Jefferson, Chris Jones, what Aaron Donald was his entire career. There's just a different level there. And I don't, outside of Tressett Punter, who I think has been one of the best five punters in the NFL for a long time, and when Trent Williams is the best tackle in the, or one of the five best tackles in the league, guys like Joe Thomas were still in the league then, but certainly one of the best five. Anthony, I don't even know if most people remember what that looks like.
I would make the argument for Sam Cosmi right now at right guard, but that's about it.
You know, he's probably the closest. I don't know that.
I was looking
to
at
me,
the
like a blue chip guy is pretty unanimous, and yeah. There's a nut like. When Fowler did the ESPN survey and he didn't make the top 10, I was like, whoa. Because he's definitely in some people's top fives. And I do think he slept on. But like, if execs around the league aren't saying his name enough that he doesn't crack that top 10,
yeah.
Like, I think they're wrong. But like, the point would be that it's a no-brainer. Like, Aaron Donald was never left off that list.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a chance by the end of the season that Cosmi is there, and then he starts to, you know, he just got paid, he gets some more recognition. Sometimes the recognition comes after the reality in terms of if you were to watch every guard in the league and grade it out. But I also don't think he's been so thoroughly dominant that he is a no-brainer. But he's probably the best. He's probably, outside of Alan Payne and McLaurin, the guy who has the best case on this team, and certainly is the guy that has the best chance to elevate to that based off his age and career trajectory.
For sure.
All right, continuing on, never read the comments here on the Hoffman Show. We got, did I put another one? Man, I put a lot of good comments in on this week. Mr. Swervon, frequent commenter. People will say they didn't do enough, but can't even give a logical take. I'm talking about the offseason here. People will say they didn't do enough, but can't give a logical take on who they would or should have or could have gotten in free agency. A lot of our fans want to spend money just to spend money. Building a team means nothing to them. They think it's Madden and everything just gels. Philly had a roster already. Texans took 3 years. Lions took 3 years. And Giants, along with us, played a very easy schedule. We all could have made the playoffs that year. Talking about when, you know, the Giants made the playoffs in year one with Shane and Dable. The caller had referenced that specifically in the segment that he was commenting on. Yes. That is correct. Like, everyone wants to pretend like the Houston Texans were built in a year. No, the Houston Texans were built over the course of multiple years. In the third year, second year, depending on when you want to give the start date of the rebuild, they fired their coach and drafted not just one, but two players in the top five because they decided that they were ready to launch. And they got in that one of those picks, CJ Stroud, who was the most pro-ready quarterback that's apparently come out in a long, long time. Something they were right about, more right than anybody or than a lot of other teams, including the Carolina Panthers, who had a chance to take him and didn't. They took Bryce Young instead. But, like, they were right. But they had built an infrastructure. You know, they had guys like Laremy Tunsil. Talk about top five tackles. Like, Laremy Tunsil is a blue-chip player. So they already had that guy in place. They had some guys defensively that were really good, and then they obviously bring in D'Amico, and you know they've been building towards a certain style, and voila, they do it. Teams like the Lions took multiple years. The Lions stunk Dan Campbell's first year. Everyone was laughing at him because he's talking about eating kneecaps, and they weren't very good. And then all of a sudden, I think it was back half of his second year, they were one of the best teams in football coming down the stretch. They knock Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs in his final game in Green Bay. And then next, they just continue that hot streak through last season. And now here they are starting 1-0, one of the favorites once again. And so you think about some of the teams that have early success and on rebuilds. And the reality is you probably just weren't paying attention to the first couple of years of their rebuilds. You're much more likely to have a Lions or even like the 49ers, right? Which is the model here because, well, Adam Peters is a part of it. Like, they weren't that good in 2017. But they had guys like, what's his name? Logan Paulson, who came in. And Logan helped set the foundation and be like, this is what it means to be a pro. George Kittle, young tight end who's been brought in. And man, this kid looks pretty good. And a guy like Logan helped make sure that they got the absolute best out of George Kittle. And look what's happened to George Kittle. Not that Logan deserves any significant credit for that, but I'm sure George would give Logan some sort of credit for being like, oh, I saw how that guy came to work every day. And also, they probably knew that was within George Kittle because they scout really well. And so it took a while, and they had some missteps along the way in terms of, you know, they messed up the Trey Lance thing and other things that they got right and wrong along the way. But if you take the time and build it right, not only are you having a chance to be really good, but you have some resiliency. Like, San Francisco messed up the Trey Lance thing and still has been to multiple Super Bowls. That's really hard to do. Not just miss on a top five pick, but trade up for that pick, give up assets, and still have the resiliency, still do well enough in your scouting in other places, still have the schematic advantage because Kyle Shanahan's really good at his job to overcome that. Like, that's big time stuff. And so if that's the model, yeah, it might take a couple of years. It didn't take forever in San Francisco, but it's definitely going to take a couple. And by the way, that San Francisco team had some pieces that were left over from the previous iteration of them being good that helped them launch a little bit faster than the Washington Commanders, who tore down their entire roster, basically had very few players, and all the players that remained had barely ever been on a winning team in the NFL. So, starting about 6 feet under, if you ask me, on this whole rebuild thing, having to fill in some gaps and then build, like, you got to almost build a foundation underneath the foundation. That's kind of what is happening right now. Then there's the Emmanuel Forbes thing, which we obviously talked about earlier in the week. Anthony, I feel like we should still do the Forbes comments, even though this is the everything has changed because of the injury, but they were interesting. Yep. Go ahead and do these. Okay, mm-hmm. Anthony in his green shirt is giving me the green light. What shirt you got on there?
That's my middle school. WJA. Oh. There it is, baby.
There you go. Okay. I'm just wondering. Anthony's a big polo guy. Anyway, Emmanuel Forbes, he plays cornerback for the Commanders, and he did not play particularly well on Sunday. And the comments had things to say. Jimmy Z 2098, Forbes absolutely sucks. Get rid of him now. This guy will never be an NFL starting cornerback. He can't cover anybody decent. I think you meant decently. You can't really fix that. Sure, with time, he might get a little better. So it'll go from horrible to just really bad. And the reason I identified that comment is because it's literally back to back with this one from Joshua BO2N. Says Darius Slay played so bad his rookie year he was benched. Lots of other examples like that in the league. Yeah. Patience. It's something that is in short supply in the universe. It is something that is in short supply in the NFL. But having some can pay off. And again, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are trained professionals designed to know whether patience is worth having. We're all going to have patience now with this injury. But, you know, then you got comments like this. L. Yonel, wait a second. I didn't read this screen name beforehand. L. Yonel, do we think this is a Linnell Willingham pseudonym?
I'm not going to lie. I thought that's what you were getting at.
L. Yonel?
Yonel, yeah.
We're on to you. Come on, Willingham. You got to be more creative than that. If you're going to have burner accounts, let's at least make them good. I don't think it's Linnell. Anyway, L. Yonel 6524 says, I'm so tired of hearing all the excuses for Forbes. Everybody wants to blame Jack Del Rio as if he couldn't develop him. Well, what's the excuse going to be if he does this all year? Dude tried to jump for an interception. He could have easily batted the ball down. Either way, he'll never be a shutdown corner, more like a gamble corner like D-Hall, and that's it. His confidence is gone. You can see it in his play, not what he says. Don't invite Fred Smoot to any more draft days because homeboy is dookie. We got D-Hall catching strays. We got Fred Smoot catching strays. And we got Emmanuel Forbes just catching whatever the heck that was.
God dang.
And he said the word dookie.
I have no words.
I could see that, which makes for great radio, let me tell you. I don't think anyone's making... It's not excuses. Like, there's reasons. He's poorly coached. It's really hard. And if he can't figure it out with multiple coaches, then multiple things can be true. Jack Del Rio could have been a bad defensive coordinator by the end of his time in Washington. Defensive backs coaches here could have been bad. And also, Emmanuel Forbes might also be bad. They clearly weren't good at picking talent the last regime. So multiple things might be true at once. It's not excuses. It's just that's life, especially life in the NFL. It's hard. If everyone was great at drafting, nobody would miss. And we know that the miss rate in the NFL draft is really, really high. But then you get comments like this from WhamBam21. Wham! Last year counts. The film is the film. And I responded, Anthony, by going, counts means what? Film is the film, but it requires context. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. And this comment legitimately cracked me up because this is peak internet take right here. Ready for this one? No other team or any coach on this staff, for that matter, is going to say, well, last year didn't count because Ron Rivera was the coach. He's been extremely bad in man-to-man situations and as a tackler. Bad coaching or not, he's the player and that's his film. The only reason you're giving him a two-game leash is because you're going off last year partly. Here's the problem with WhamBam21 comment that no other team or any coach on this staff was going to say last year didn't count and give Emmanuel Forbes a chance. The people in charge are giving him a chance. You are literally factually wrong on the very substance basis that you are basing your very silly internet take on. That, no one else would give him a chance. Everyone else in the league would have done the same exact thing this team did, which is say, he's a first-round pick, he's under contract, let's see what we can do. And they're going to continue to develop him. And that is a thing that is really hard for players when they're in the spotlight to admit, like, hey, I'm being developed right now. I'm more of a project. No player is ever going to say it. No coach is ever going to say it, especially one that's getting reps in real time. But the idea that no one else would do this, no one would give him a chance when he's literally getting one, now obviously sidetracked by injury, it really undercuts the argument when that's just literally not the facts on the ground. Right in front of our faces. Okay, funny ones to end it, Anthony. On your continued Josh Allen take, where you think he's overrated, he's not in your top five.
Yep.
George Garnavos says, no offense, I mean this as nicely as possible. If Allen isn't your top four, you are smoking crack. To which I responded, wow. That escalated quickly.
That did escalate really quickly. No matter what
I think it's the part where you say you're not smoking crack, Anthony.
Well, that too.
Anthony,
yes, I don't do
for
that.
For the record, Anthony is not smoking crack.
No, I'm not. Josh Allen is still
completely sober.
Not in my top five.
Okay, just a very sober.
Just mine. Just mine, though. Just mine.
And then Trell Riddick says, Michael Phillips, on our hit with Phillips from Monday, Michael Phillips is just trying to feed us BS, LOL, be a realist, man. But he spelled realist, R-E-A-L-E-S-T. As in, like, yo, that dude is the realist. Not as in, like, stop being in fantasy land, be a realist.
Yeah.
So, of course, I responded, Michael Phillips is the realist. Look it up.
Look with it the up. EST, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like,
because they meant
look,
the
look
IST.
Up what you got, but because you already know Michael Phillips.
Yeah.
Clearly is the realist. And by the way, that's the first time that's ever been said about Michael Phillips.
Oh, wow.
All right. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, top. Anthony's still. Yeah. You caught some strays on the internet this 2 week, buddy. When we get back. Our top headlines of the day from Command Land, Joe Witt Jr. and Cliff Kingsbury spoke, plus the major injury that is changing the course of the Commander season. We talk about it all in our pick six at six here on the Team 980.